Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Hennessy Gas call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference call over to your host for today, Beau Barnett. Beau, please go ahead.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome everyone. So for those of you who I've not had the opportunity to meet before, my name is Beau Barnett. I am the sales director for Hennessy Funds. Want to first off thank everybody for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us today for what I know is going to be a very productive discussion on natural gas, which is certainly a topic that has been front and center in the news, obviously, lately. Real quick, if it's your first time looking at Hennessy Funds, before we get started, I just want to give you just a real quick overview of who we are as a firm. Basically, at Hennessy Funds, we manage 16 mutual funds as well as one ETF. And then obviously the focus of the discussion today is going to be on one of our oldest funds, which is the Hennessy Gas Utility Fund. So if it's your first time looking at our gas utility fund, the ticker hopefully is a pretty easy one to remember. Just think gas, FX. So literally the word gas, F is in Frank, X is in X-ray. Basically what we're doing in the fund is we do follow an index-based methodology, which is focused on the distribution side of natural gas. So you'll hear us kind of talk a lot about that today. So think if you're first time looking at, you know, the distribution side, it's less about kind of pulling it out of the ground and more about actually delivering natural gas to the end user. So I want to introduce our speakers for today. First off, I want to introduce Ryan Kelly. Ryan is the Chief Investment Officer at Hennessy Funds, as well as the Portfolio Manager of the Hennessy Gas Utility Fund. So Ryan, welcome. We certainly appreciate you taking some time to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
And then I also want to introduce Richard Meyer, who is our special guest from the American Gas Association. Richard is the Vice President of Energy Markets Analysis and Standards at the AGA. Richard, thank you as well for joining us. We're certainly looking forward to getting your thoughts on the distribution side of natural gas today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it. So just one really quick admin note before we jump into everything, because I know we are limited on time. We are going to go for a half hour today. The call is going to be conducted using a Q&A format. We definitely appreciate the fact that many of you did submit questions. When we were kind of putting together our agenda, we tried to get as many of those questions in there as we could. But if we don't get to your question today, rest assured, my team and I will be following up with everybody individually post-call. So with that, gentlemen, you know, again, we got a lot of ground to cover and not a ton of time to do it. So if it's okay with you, maybe we can go ahead and jump right in with Richard maybe kicking us off.
Very good. Sounds good.
Sounds good. All right. So, Richard, I guess to kick us off, maybe talking a little bit about what we're seeing geopolitically. You know, it's been over a year now since Russia invaded Ukraine. Could you just talk to us about, you know, what has happened in terms of global demand for our natural gas, U.S. natural gas, since that time started?
Sure. When I think back to the conversations we were having on energy in January of last year, it seems very different than where we were just 2 months later. After the Russian war on Ukraine, that really called into stark focus the need for energy security globally. Obviously, Europe facing significant challenges related to pipeline gas from Russia onto the continent, and the desperate need to find alternative sources of natural gas, including flowing supplies via LNG from the United States. And in fact, the United States stepped up the vast majority of new LNG supplies coming into Europe. We're from the United States, and LNG from U.S. becoming a new bedrock of European energy security. But the 2022 did bring along its share of challenges, namely on the pricing environment. We saw very high natural gas pricing for a good part of the year in many parts of the globe, including Europe and in Asia. And we did see a temporary run-up in natural gas prices here at home. You asked about global demand. There were some headwinds last year and a slight contraction, it looks like, in global demand. But looking ahead, the IEA and others do see continued growth long-term for natural gas demand globally. And the reason for that is simple. it remains a versatile, clean fuel that helps power economies and helps power manufacturing and helps keep homes and businesses warm when they need it most.
Gotcha. Staying on that theme of, you mentioned the LNG, liquid natural gas. Can you just talk, as you look forward maybe over the next several years, you know, obviously we've kind of stepped up our ability to provide that to the world. What do you see from U.S. LNG shipping over, you know, the next several years?
It's crazy to think about where we were just a few years ago. In 2016, we were exporting precisely zero volumes of LNG from the lower 48 in the U.S. Today, we're at roughly 13 billion cubic feet per day. That's about 13% of total dry gas production produced in the lower 48. But you know what happened last year? The U.S. became the world's largest LNG exporter. We are top dog in the globe, on the globe, for LNG. And the outlook does indicate growth. So for the next couple of years, it's unlikely we're going to see significant volumetric growth in terms of LNG feed gas demand for LNG export. And the reason is because we're kind of at capacity right now. But starting in 2024, 2025, some new export projects are expected to come online, particularly in the Gulf Coast. And that export capacity could increase upwards of closing in on 20 billion cubic feet per day. So from a volumetric basis, the LNG export market does look to be a growth market for the U.S. and for U.S. natural gas, produced here in the here in the U.S. and North America. The last thing I'll say is that demand could remain high, particularly if the pricing environment in other parts of the globe remain at an elevated premium compared to North American prices. And again, that indicates the desirability of natural gas as a fuel for economies across the globe.
Gotcha. And looking, I guess, back to the pandemic, can you just fill us in real quick? How has our U.S. natural gas production and demand kind of rebounded as we've sort of come out of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Sure. And, well, maybe stepping back and remembering that natural gas is a critical part of our energy economy and how we fuel our way of life here at home. Today, natural gas serves about one-third of all energy needs in the United States. And coming out of the pandemic, we've seen growth in the natural gas market. In 2022, the U.S. set a new annual record for volumes of natural gas consumed in the country. And we also set 9 monthly records, both in the winter and during the summer, those different winter and summer peaks when gas is used here at home for, say, home heating during the winter, also for power generation needs during the summer as a critical fuel for reliability and as people turn on their air conditioners and use power for that. On the flip side of the ledger, you've got the production side, and 2022 was another record year. We saw volumes produced in the U.S. grow about 4% and gross production reaching at about 119 billion cubic feet per day in 2022. In terms of individual markets within the U.S., we saw record use for natural gas in the power sector. That's both on average and on peak. So again, those summer peak needs, using natural gas more than ever, and despite the higher pricing environment that we saw during the summer, which in prior years would tend to kind of depress demand. We didn't see that this year. And then I've already mentioned the growth in natural gas for export as well. So really great. The last thing I'll say is on the residential commercial side, people are, while volumetrically those markets aren't growing as much, these are markets typically served by gas utilities. What is growing are the number of customers, the number of connections to those customers, and the investment made to connect those customers. So it's really maybe not a volumetric growth story, but it is a growth story in all these other metrics that do matter for gas utilities.
Okay. Richard, what's when you look at prices of natural gas lately, you know, there's been some movement there. Can you talk about what is driving the wide fluctuations that we've seen over the course of the last year?
Yeah, there's kind of a storyline that seems to have emerged that's pinpointing, you know, LNG exports as the primary culprit, so to speak, driving natural gas prices last year. I think that's not the right way to look at it. Exports of natural gas are a piece of the demand picture. The largest share of incremental demand last year was in the electric power sector. And so it was domestic end uses that was driving demand. But that's not also the full picture. You got to look at the production side and constraints that we saw in growing produced volumes. And that had to do with several issues, including supply chain crunches and other issues. But there's really three fundamental, I think, reasons why we saw some of the pricing behavior in the North American natural gas market last year that we did. The first is lack of infrastructure and connectiveness. We've got to have the pipes to move the gas from where it's produced to where it's used. And in some cases, there are significant constraints on that infrastructure. Two, I mentioned this already, but increased reliance on electric power. And in some cases, that demand remained very elevated despite the high prices. And then third, more around trading behaviors and maybe correlated trading behaviors. And really what we saw are kind of amplified ups and downs, perhaps as a result of this trading behavior. But I would note that this wasn't just simply in the natural gas market. We saw this across other energy commodities and across commodities in general. So I think that there is a connectiveness in the trading behavior, I suppose, across the whole commodity space. But at the end of the day, the U.S. possesses a tremendous abundance of natural gas. We have a record amount of technically recoverable resources and proved reserves in this country combined. And so really the limiting factor isn't that molecule or the geology. The limiting factor, it may be that ability to build infrastructure to move that gas from where it's produced to where it's used.
Got it. The next question, this came up numerous times from the advisors on the call, and it's very timely, but just given the overall increase that we're seeing in demand across the board, you mentioned, you know, residential, commercial, industrial, you know, there has been some controversy in regards to potential, you know, natural gas bans in certain states. Can you talk to that real quick?
Sure. There is a policy push in several corners of the country to perhaps try to limit access to natural gas. I would say even in these corners where some of these policy discussions are happening or even policy's been implemented, what we're seeing on the ground is that there's still growth. There's growth in customers. There's still growth in connections. Are there some policy headwinds? For sure. But when you look at the data, what we see in aggregate and even in these regions is still a pretty positive story. I'll tell you, in 2020, by the end of 2020, the number of natural gas customers added that year was at a 16-year high, and more than 1.5 million new residential natural gas customers added between 2019 and 2021. So again, a real growth story. And why is that? Well, gas is affordable. And I guess we were just talking about prices, and I failed to note that we're kind of out of that higher price environment and into a lower price environment once again. You know, now Henry Hub trading $2. There's more that goes into the natural gas price that's delivered to customers, but it, you know, using natural gas means that you're using the most affordable fuel available in your home. And that's not just according to AGA, that's also according to data from the Department of Energy when they publish their residential unit costs. So natural gas is affordable, it's desirable, and it is reliable. It is a reliable fuel delivered to your home. Something to be said about piping gas and molecules underground than, say, electrons in over wires and the resilience of the system, so to speak, in terms of how that energy is moved to customers. Maybe the last thing I'll say is that as we see the policy landscape, you talked about bans, but there's also a lot of policy underway to protect that consumer choice. And we see 20 states today with laws on the books that effectively allow, you know, make sure that customers have access or will in the future have access to natural gas, and that those kind of activities to ban natural gas can't take place. There's also another 13 states right now that are actively considering that additional kind of legislation. So, you know, there's a lot of policy underway. We continue to support a fact-based discussion on the role and the value of gas, both as an affordable consumer energy source, but also as an environmental resource for states, for cities to meet their environmental goals.
Understood. And, you know, I think that actually segues in. So I'm going to ask you one more question, and then we're going to switch over to Ryan. But I am going to come back to Richard at the end for some final thoughts. But I think what you just said kind of segues exactly into, you know, in your view, what is the role of natural gas and utilities in the energy transition as we move towards, you know, cleaner energy sources?
I think there was a narrative emerging a couple years ago that, you know, this industry was kind of in its twilight period, that it may not be consistent with certain environmental goals that are being laid out. I think that narrative is starting to fall away, because as you really dig deeper and you research these issues and you look at the value that this industry provides today and can provide in the future, what you'd start to discover and understand in looking at the research, it shows that to meet our climate goals, we can do it quicker and more cheaply, less expensively, with this infrastructure and with these molecules. So with natural gas, with other low carbon gases, and this infrastructure to meet our goals. And so what we're seeing today is a lot of opportunity. This industry is innovating, it's investing, it is growing. When we look to those opportunities to contribute to ambitious environmental goals, including decarbonization, there's really four key buckets of opportunity. First is improving energy demand and energy efficiency, and then it can include new technologies, say like a gas heat pump that can achieve a greater than 100% efficiency at the customer site. Reducing the environmental footprint of the energy that's produced and transported, so via methane emissions reductions, and the use of better technology to identify methane emissions on the gas utility system as well. The next bucket of opportunity is really around low carbon gases. So this includes renewable natural gas from biogenic sources or even electrical sources of clean electricity. And then the production, transportation, delivery of hydrogen as well. And then finally, carbon capture and sequestration and negative emissions technologies, really a critical opportunity for not just this industry, but economy-wide to help meet these ambitious goals. And I think that there's a real opportunity for the industry and will continue to invest in those. I want to say that last year in August, the federal government passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and we are looking at a number of opportunities there that will accelerate investment in all of these areas that I just mentioned. So that can include the renewable natural gas tax credit for carbon capture and sequestration, tax credits for end-use technologies, including that efficient gas appliances and whole home approaches to energy efficiency, as well as incentives for continuing to reduce methane as well. So really, I think a lot of investment opportunity supported by the federal government and already underway, regardless of federal action, by the gas utility industry itself.
Lots of reasons to be optimistic. Richard, you know, I'm going to come back to you again here in just a few minutes to get your final thoughts, but at this point, why don't we shift over to Ryan, and we'll talk a little bit more about the kind of the fund itself, get a little bit deeper into that. Ryan, could you just talk a little bit about how the fund is currently positioned, what that composition looks like, and maybe highlight some of the things that you see that you think are really the long-term performance drivers of the fund?
Sure, absolutely. And Richard, thank you again for that information. Wow, that was really a whole lot of great information you passed along to us, so we appreciate that. The Hennessy Gas Utility Fund, it owns all of the publicly traded members of the AGA, the American Gas Association. This covers over 95% of natural gas distribution in the United States. When we break it down by sector, about 30% are multi-utilities, and these are companies that have both natural gas and electric. 25% are energy companies, primarily pipelines, as well as LNG export companies, but they're classified under the energy sector category. 15% are electric utilities, but they do have some natural gas operations as well. And 15% are pure play natural gas utilities. So again, all these companies are involved in the distribution and delivery of natural gas. However, certainly over time, the composition of the fund has changed, and it has evolved, and in very much the same way that the companies have as well. You know, it's diversified across the distribution and delivery, power generation, LNG exports, a small amount now of exploration and production of oil and natural gas, and, you know, more so now than in the past, certainly renewable energy sources as well. So the drivers of the fund, let's talk about those a little bit, much more diverse as well than they have been, you know, over the longer term. But still, it's really the increase in demand for natural gas and the increase in demand for electricity, since so much of that is created by natural gas, generated by natural gas, and the general overall energy usage that really drives the fund. We like to say the more that the meter spins, the better it is for our portfolio companies, and that certainly holds true now as it ever has in the past. And on an annual basis, weather is a major driver of demand as well. We have with colder winters or warmer summers, this means that that can certainly increase demand over time. One note I wanted to make, we always like to make this, is that the price of natural gas is not a direct driver of the fund. So when we see these large fluctuations, that is not a direct driver of the actual fund because that cost is passed along to the customers. It's a pass-through. And I would say that, you know, now that we're down at even less than $2 per million BTU right now for natural gas, that is good for affordability. That's good for the longer term because it continues to allow natural gas to remain accessible and competitive in this evolving energy landscape.
Ryan, you mentioned renewables. Is there anything you could dive into a little bit deeper there in terms of what our exposure is overall to renewables within the fund?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, again, primarily we own utilities, pipeline companies. Many of these are involved in the transition to renewables. About two-thirds of our investments already have some exposure to renewables, and we do think that this will be a driver. The growth in alternative energy sources will be a driver of the fund over the next few decades. And again, that's because many of our multi and electric utilities are investing in wind and solar, increasing capacity there. They will continue to benefit from both an increase in CapEx there as well as potential customer growth going forward. And when it comes to the pure play natural gas utilities, and this is, you know, along the lines of what some of what Richard discussed earlier, the utilities are looking to diversify more into RNG and hydrogen blends as well, and that's good for long-term customer growth as well. So, you know, I would say that when it comes to the energy transition, we do think that the fund will continue to benefit as utilities continue to change their energy mix.
Gotcha. And Ryan, if you're looking at utilities, maybe you're not familiar with it. You know, it's obviously we're in a higher inflation, rising interest rate type of an environment. If an advisor's looking at utilities, what should they kind of expect, in terms of historical performance during a period like this?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, this idea that rising rates means you got to get out of utilities. Last year was very much a contradiction to that. Of course, we saw one of the greatest and fastest increase in rates ever, and the fund was up over 6% during that time period. And the S&P was down 18%. So, you know, what we've done is we've looked at the performance of the fund over its almost 34 years of history. and we've compared those yearly performance metrics versus various different factors, interest rates, reserves, price of natural gas, et cetera. And we found that there is no statistically significant correlation between the performance of this fund and movements in interest rates. When it comes to inflation, higher inflation, I would say, you know, the industry, just like any other industry or any other company, certainly as that's happening, that can drag on earnings in the short term. But over time, utilities are able to pass along these costs to customers. And they do this through their regulatory process. You know, a lot of people think negatively about the industry because it's so heavily regulated, but there are some benefits as well. And one of them, I would say, is that, you know, they're given these allowable ROEs that they try to achieve, and that over time those change. And when there are differences in costs, et cetera, they are able to work with their regulators to continue to try to make those ROEs over the long term.
Great. Ryan, where do you see valuations? So if you look at current valuations in utilities, maybe both how we look at it historically as well as just to the broader market in general, where are we at these days?
Well, historically, utilities actually trade at a slight premium to the overall market, just by a few percent, 3 to 5%, let's say. Right now, they're trading at a slight discount. The S&P 500 trading at about 18 times this year's estimate on a PE basis, and utilities are about 17 and a half times. Also, over the past 10 years, so from a historical context, utilities traded at about 18.4 times, and again, they're trading at 17 and a half now. So a discount on both metrics, they look attractive from that point of view. And why is it that they trade at or above, you know, sort of market PEs? I would say the reason is that they have a very consistent earnings track record. When you look at the last, you know, 10 years or more, we're seeing just consistent 6 to 8% growth in EPS for a lot of these companies. You don't see a whole lot of swings up and down. And, you know, it's that, I believe, that lets the utilities garner a slightly better PE multiple than, say, the overall market.
Ryan, one last question before we do some final thoughts. You know, we know that historically, if you're investing in gas utility stocks, you do enjoy usually an attractive dividend stream as well as some pretty good potential for, you know, capital appreciation. Can you just talk about where the current levels are for dividends and hold in the holdings that we have in the fund?
Yes, 47 out of our 50 companies pay a dividend. This is very consistent over time. The yield right now for those 47 companies, stocks, is 3.8%. Growth is solid. The last year, they've grown about 3.7% on average. And over the past 3 years, dividends have grown 5% on average per year. So this is consistent with what we've seen over the long period, over a long period of time. The fund itself, if you look back to its inception, about two-thirds of the performance of the total return of the fund is from stock price appreciation, and about one-third is from dividends. And, you know, we think that's going to continue for quite some time, and there's really no difference in what we see going forward with dividends.
Okay. All right, so time for just a couple of final thoughts. So, Richard, if I could turn it back over to you, if you're looking ahead, just what do you think is in store for the rest of 2023? Can you just kind of talk about your outlook for gas for the industry?
Absolutely. So, you know, what we saw the last couple of years was really a market tightness in U.S. natural gas. In other words, we were demanding more than we were supplying. That seems to have flipped, and expectations now in 2023 and 2024 from the U.S. government and others show that that market tightness is loosened, and we're really going to start to supply more than we're demanding. And that's that reality is likely making its way into the natural gas pricing that we're seeing today. You know, for the rest of the year, I'd say on the policy front, there's a lot of things I could point to, but one in particular is around permitting reform. And we hear a lot around the need for permitting reform on the electricity side and the inability to site projects or build new transmission infrastructure, but the permitting reform is just as critical in the oil and gas space, and the need for permitting reform to facilitate more infrastructure and natural gas pipeline investment here in the U.S. So I think that's going to be really critical, but if we can crack the code on permitting reform or at least make some progress in that direction, that that could be very good in terms of unlocking more potential in the U.S. natural gas market. I'd like to say longer term and a final thought, remember the U.S. possesses an immense abundance of natural gas, but that's not really what it means. What it means is the U.S. possesses a strategic advantage compared to the rest of the globe in terms of energy. And that strategic advantage in terms of U.S. natural gas means that we're going to be able to manufacture cheaply here. U.S. agriculture can thrive better than the rest of than other places in the globe. And as we continue to build the things we need for all these other energy technologies, U.S. natural gas is going to be a critical input. And then, of course, I talked about those the opportunities around reducing emissions and all of the innovation and investment that we're seeing today to unlock more opportunities in the future. So I think the future for 2023 is still bright, definitely some challenges on the horizon, and long term, we've got a really good story ahead.
Excellent. Well, Richard, again, we really, really appreciate you taking some time to be on the call today and all the insights you've provided us. Going to turn it over just for one last point to Ryan. So, Ryan, if you're an advisor and you're looking at natural gas distribution companies for maybe the first time, what is your case for using this type of strategy?
Sure. Our investment case in many ways remains the same as it always has been. We believe that investing in these companies, in the natural gas distribution companies and utilities, has many benefits for many different types of investor portfolios. Steady and increasing dividends, growth in demand for energy, including natural gas, electricity, and renewables, increased capital expenditures, and investing back into their own businesses. These are all positives for the industry and positives for the investors. As Richard spoke a lot about, you know, U.S. natural gas is very sought after around the world. LNG exports are soaring. They've soared over the past few years, and that will continue to drive investments into more facilities going forward as well. So these are all very positive attributes for the overall industry. As investors in the space, we definitely need to be on top of the transition to a cleaner energy future. But we're also definitely cognizant of the fact that there is a need for multiple energy sources. Natural gas remains affordable, accessible, reliable, and scalable. And it's these traits that we believe will are extremely valuable to both energy distribution companies as well as their customers. We are seeing continued interest in our fund. Thank you for that, given its long-term track record as well as more recent performance. And as always, we are very, very grateful for this interest and for the trust in our process and in the fund.
Thank you, Ryan. And again, thank you as well, Richard. You know, this is great information, and we certainly appreciate both of you taking some time to share this with, you know, with us and with the advisors that we partner with. To all of you who are on the call today, we definitely look forward to working with you in the future, and we do hope that you will take a look at the Hennessy Gas Utility Fund as a solution for your clients. We will be following up with some information post-call. But in the meantime, if you'd like to, you know, take a closer look at the fund or at what we do at Hennessy in general, you can always feel free to check out our website at www.hennessyfunds.com, or you can always reach out directly to us at 800-890-7118. But we do look forward to, you know, following up with everybody post-call. And with that, I think we can go ahead and end the call here today. And I hope everybody has a great rest of the week.
Thank you, everyone. This concludes today's event. You may disconnect at this time and have a wonderful day. Thank you for your participation.